B-Pod Studios.
That would be what you would be thinking.
I think this game shines a little light on just how important Jason Tatum has been defensively to the Celtics. Now they're calling a foul on Marcus Smart. Marcus tripped up Derrick Rose.
Marcus just fouled out the thing.
He did. Well, no, he didn't foul out. Did he get kicked out?
No.
I think it's just that Brad's getting him out of the game.
Technical. Threw him out.
Yeah, now he's out. It's just a matter. Marcus's night was over. It's just a matter of how much he was going to get paid tonight, how much was going to come out of his check. So Marcus Smart is on to Milwaukee. He is ejected with 2:23 to go.
Well, you could tell that he was right there on the edge.
Yep.
And he was doing all he could to kind of show up the officials. But
a season that did not have a single bad loss in it until about 10 days ago. And now you've had three of them.
Cedric Maxwell on top of things, as always. If you're looking to build basketball skills for the young basketball fan in your home, the Junior Celtics program offers a variety of single-day clinics and week-long basketball camps for children ages 5 to 14. My son has participated in these camps and liked it so much, my daughter will be attending this summer.
Very nice.
Junior Celtics camps provide fun, build skills, and promote wellness, and fosters a lifelong love of the game.
Your son met Enes Kanter, too, right?
You met Enes Kanter and who's he, Watts?
Enes Kanter, that's been a pretty good free agent signing.
Enes Kanter comes over now because he met my son. Because he's everywhere. Registration is open for all 2020 camps with a $50 discount applied through February 1st. We did not receive that. But what would I need with that? I'm rich. For more information on the Junior Celtics program or to register for upcoming camps and clinics, visit Celtics.com/JRCeltics. And that, my friend, is called a plug. And Danny Ainge is the president of basketball operations for the Boston Celtics. And he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Ainge, hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
You have to be excited that my son and my daughter are participating in the Junior Celtics camps. I mean, what better endorsement?
Well, what position does Milo play, by the way?
It's a positional. Well, thank you for knowing his name, but it's a positional game now. We all know that.
Like no positions?
Yeah. Positionless.
He plays it all.
That's what I said. So he is a 5, he's 11, and he's 5'3", and he has a shoe size of 10. So, and can lift a car. he's that powerful. And there you go. So, Danny, you might want to keep an eye on him. We had Coach Gambino from the Boston College baseball team, and he's already on the recruiting radar. So just keep an eye on that, okay?
All right. We'll keep an eye on him.
Yeah, you've already refused to come to one of his games, but okay.
I'd like you to read those Celtics camps with a little more enthusiasm, though.
I just said my kids are going.
Fired up.
All right, let's do it again.
Okay, that's
a good point.
It's Fred's birthday today. Yeah, it's a little more laid back today.
You gotta give him
all right.
Something here.
Hey, guys, looking to build a basketball skills for the young basketball fan in your home. The Junior Celtics program offers a variety of single-day clinics and week-long basketball camps for children. I just have to fortune. Junior Celtics is fun. They build skills. They promote wellness. Because you know, you got to be well. Do tell. And fosters a lifelong love of the game. Both my little ones have ran around that place. Registration is open for all 2020 camps, and ain't too late in 2020 to get that funny money with a $50 discount applied through February 1st. For more information on the Junior Celtics program or to register for upcoming camps and clinics, visit www.celtics.com/JRCeltics.
That was well done. I'm sure Danny loved it.
Danny, I did that one good.
Fred, is today's your birthday, you said?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. If you had to take a guess on how old I am, what would you say?
Oh,
I'd say 43 or 44.
You are so kind. I'm 45 years old, and the doctor said I have at least 10 years left.
Nice. It's also Steve Pagliuca's birthday today.
Who's that?
Share birthday with two greats.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Some of us, you know, have to earn our money.
So this last couple of games, how little do you read into January basketball, or how much do you? Because, I mean, it's doesn't it seem to be human nature that the foot comes off the gas a little bit?
All-star games in sight.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think that it is called the dog days of the season, and it is hard. It's no excuse. You got to show up and play. I was worried about last night's game before the game started just because Detroit, it has not played well. And, you know, we have big games coming up this week with Milwaukee and the Lakers, and people are talking about them, and people are talking to our players about those games even before the Detroit game. And, you know, this league, it happens all the time. It happens to every team so far in the league. I see it every night as I watch NBA games. And so it's not surprising. Detroit was on fire last night. First time we've given up 60% shooting and given up back cuts and transition, easy baskets in transition. But at the same time, you got to give them credit. They did play well, and they're all NBA players, and they're all good. So it's not that surprising. It's disappointing and frustrating that we didn't play our best, but we got lots of games ahead of us.
All right, Danny. Okay, so Rich put up something on the on Twitter, which is it was not surprising to me, and it was it showed the juxtaposition of where shots were taken
20 years ago,
20 years ago, and where shots are taken now. Have you given up on the mid-range jump shot? Because I think I heard someone say Brad Stevens has something where, like, in a game, practice, if you take a mid-range jumper, you're somehow lose a point or something like that. Is that going away in the game?
It's getting less and less. I think that all of the analytics show that it's a less valuable shot than it has been in the past, obviously, but with the three-point line and trying to get to the rim more and trying to get to the free throw line, those are the most valuable shots. I will say this, though. I think that there are certain mid-range shots that are very good shots. A Kemba Walker wide-open 17-foot shot on a pick-and-roll is a really good shot.
Because Tatum takes a lot of mid-range shots.
Right, and so I think it's a fine line. I think Jason is also shooting more shots at the rim and shooting more shots at the three, so he's a work in progress on those shot selection. But if you watch most game-winning shots, most often they're mid-range shots.
Right.
And because the defense is trying to take away three-point shots, mm-hmm. and they're trying to prevent lay-ins, and they're not, you know, and there's not as many fouls called down the stretch. So I think, you know, you have to be able to make some mid-range shots. But yes, it is going the other direction. Yes, there, I have seen in practice occasionally, you know, especially with the young players and the assistant coaches running certain drills where they get fewer points for mid-range shots, and they reward the guys for taking and making threes and layups.
Okay, are you cognizant about that on defense? For instance, are you? Is it important to you to, like, guard the elbow? Are you waiting? Are you more concerned with threes or someone on the block? Is the way you play defense changed?
Yes. Yes. And you have to stretch the defense. I mean, in my day, it was much easier as a guard defending because we were more of a don't break defense, but, you know, give them the shots, contest late. Not that many people were shooting threes, and it's just evolved over time now where the guards are up pressuring the ball. You got to get into the body of the screener, get over the top of the screens. There's more energy put on defending the three-point line now than ever before, and because it's such a major weapon, teams are shooting 40, sometimes 50 three-point shots in a game. And so you have to, a lot of times you'll see no double teaming in the post.
Yeah.
And you'll concede 2 points not to give up corner threes.
Okay, so like with a guy like Drummond, who does all his scoring off the on the block, does that change the way you play defense comparatively to other teams? That you know that's the entire focus is offensive rebounding and getting to the rim, being around the rim.
You know, I don't think it changes the focus. I mean, they have two key scorers on their team in Drummond and Rose that are scoring more in the mid range than the 3-point line, but they do have good 3-point shooters all around them, and even Markieff Morris scoring some on the post. There's teams that do more, you know, Houston with James Harden, who's developed the step back 3-point shot as one of the best weapons in the entire league, maybe in league history.
Well, you got to guard him in half court because he's afraid to throw him up
right
from 80.
Right.
Feet
out. So, yeah. So like, you know, every team is a little bit different and your focuses are different, but again, you know, you still need to do a good job of defending the 3-point line.
Danny, trade deadline is 3 weeks from today, and rightly or wrongly, you guys have been linked to the possibility of making a trade for a guy like Andre Drummond. Speaking in general terms, how active are your trade talks right now?
Not as active as there have been in other trade markets. It's still a little bit early, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of activity. There's a little. There are some discussions going on, but not as much as some years.
You want to hear a really funny joke?
Oh boy!
Yeah.
All I gotta do is if you get Andre Drummond, keep him out of all the bike shops.
Oh, that's a different strokes joke.
Oh man!
Oh boy, Danny.
I'm not saying where I'm letting you get out of this one.
Oh. It was listen, there was the guy, the Maytag guy was. Yeah,
but yes, you're right.
Oh. All right. So
it's a seminal episode of television.
It is a seminal episode, which Danny has obviously seen, but judging by his laughter.
Danny, I gave you a heads up that I was coming.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You didn't watch Different Strokes?
Yeah. He was playing basketball in the NBA at the time.
So what?
Right over my head.
Well, Danny, that's on you.
He's on the road playing like Buffalo or something.
So what, he doesn't have a TV in his hotel room?
Okay.
You're
going to be on the road today, and that joke's going to hit you. And you're going to go, and all of a sudden you're going to laugh so hard that you're just going to not be able to control yourself.
Now everyone on the internet's going to say how I screwed up the internet.
It's the greatest joke ever. So, So Danny, I want to ask you about this because he's someone that I think you have grown, you had a good personal relationship with over the past couple of years. What's happened with Alex Cora is interesting because he's an extremely likable guy, and he's somebody that obviously was, you know, well-liked amongst his teammates and also probably amongst you guys and everyone with the Celtics. I know you guys have done a lot of stuff together. He's been at the game. And what did you make of what happened with Alex Cora and the whole cheating scandal and now him not being the manager of the Red Sox anymore?
Well, I'm sad for Alex and his family, and I like him. I like him a lot. It was I thought he was a terrific manager, and I think it's a bummer for the whole Red Sox organization. But you know what I don't like about it is that you know we'll judge him, and remember him on something that wasn't so good, the scandal that happened in Houston and Boston, and it's unfortunate because I'll remember Alex as being a really good guy and a guy that got us a championship in 2018. I won't remember him for this.
And I know basketball is a completely different sport, but if you were to have a guy that you really liked, who seemed to be a pretty good guy, I don't know him personally, but from what everyone says, he seems to be a good guy, who did this. Let's say he serves his punishment of 2 years. Is that somebody that you would consider hiring again as a manager, even after all of this, if you believed in the guy and you liked the guy in the first place, would you hire him back?
Yes, I would. I would consider doing it. I'm not saying I would for sure. I mean, I think there's a time and a place that You know, maybe it's just not worth the distractions and what might come, but I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand and just say I wouldn't. I would say I might. Yes.
Danny, real quick.
If I believed in his character and his, and, you know, and it was just, I mean, listen, baseball, you know, I played a little bit of baseball, and baseball, there is this culture of, you know, trying to steal signs, and everybody's doing it. And I'm not saying that what they did is right by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a 100-year culture of like gaining an advantage at all times of stealing the signs of the other teams. And, whether you're a first base coach or a catcher or a man on second base, you know, you're always trying to steal the sign. So, you know, for me, from my perspective, it's wrong what was done. But it's, I think that center field cameras, you know, and when you have Eck calling which pitch is coming when he's doing broadcasts of the game, because he can see the sign. I think that there's some responsibility there.
Well, when you played baseball, I mean, was there an access to a television that was playing the game? I know it was like early 80s, but I'm wondering if there was even a chance. Like when you guys heard about signals being stolen, what was the most complex scheme that you had heard of during your time playing?
You know, there was one time I remember where they thought the first base coach could see the signal from the catcher. And, but, you know, often guys on second base could read and relay pitches that were coming to the hitter. So, but it was usually based on location as opposed to curveball, slider, fastball, whatever. It was more coming inside, catcher setting up on the inside of the plate or the outside part of the plate. Guy on second base could give the location of the pitch.
Helps more, knowing what's coming or where the location's going to be?
Oh, we're telling what's coming for sure, whether it's an off-speed pitch or a fast pitch. But I think that's a definite much bigger advantage, because oftentimes the pitcher does – a lot of hitters didn't even want to know from second base, because the pitchers would throw it on the outside corner and they were trying to hit the inside corner.
Right. Because the dumbest argument I've heard about this is, well, you still got to hit it. And I'm like, if you're a major league player and you know a fastball is coming, you're going to get around on that. I mean, there's not a player in the major leagues that can't hit a major league fastball. So, I mean,
I mean, everybody knows Chapman's throwing fastball 90% of the time. And they're still having a hard time hitting it.
All right. Well, he has movement on his fastball, but then I'll give you examples of guys that throw 95 that get shelled. I mean, there's a few very gifted people who have movement on their fastball. But if you can't get around on a major league fastball, you're not going to be in the major leagues very long.
What's our Hall of Fame pitcher's name from the Yankees?
Oh, Rivera?
Mariano?
Yeah, Mariano. Everybody knew what pitch was coming every time.
Yeah, but that wasn't a fastball.
I know.
He had, like, unworldly movement on that. Like, that was an unhittable pitch. Like, because it moved differently every time. But, I mean...
Right, so the debate is going to continue on this issue as to, okay, yes, it's cheating. You can't do it. You violated the rules of Major League Baseball, but there will still always be the question of how much of an advantage. And I think that the opinions will vary dramatically. And I'm saying what you're saying is some pitchers it matters, some pitchers it might not matter. A guy throws more changeups. It's a big advantage to know whether a changeup's coming or a fastball's coming. That's a big advantage.
Sure. All right, well, Danny Ainge, I think that I broke down the game with you very well. I think we talked about schematics. I think we talked about philosophy, defensive and offensive. You would have to agree with that, correct?
Not quite, but...
we talked about...
You did give a good Celtics camp plot.
I talked about the death of the mid-range shot. I talked about how you defend... are you interested in someone who's at the elbow? I told you that I knew that Brad Stevens played a game during practice. This is not in the paper. I know that Brad Stevens played a game in practice where you get negative points for taking a mid-range jumper. I think that I showed proof today.
Yeah, you have some secret sources in there. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who the secret source is? Brad. All right, listen. And then I knocked it out of the park with
I thought you were going to say it was Cantor.
Well, me and Cantor, all we do is discuss. We have a book club, and then I knocked it out of the park with the Different Strokes joke. So right. I think when you look back on this, you'll realize how special it was.
Okay,
it's my birthday, Danny.
Okay, Fred, you did good today, brother. I hope you have a fun day today. I hope you got a lot of fun, exciting celebration in store.
It's just going to be me and my daughter.
45 is a big day.
Yeah. Just another day closer to that sweet, sweet eternal nap.
All right, guys.
I love how you let that one hang.
All right. Danny Ainge, thank you so much for the time, sir. We look forward to talking to you soon.
All right.
Thanks. Yeah. Oh, the amount of Different Strokes memes I have been sent in the last 5 minutes.
No, but it's the brilliance of Fred letting that just sit there for 5, 6, 7
Well, then
seconds.
Everyone's going to say I screwed up the interview, but I thought I had, like, intelligent questions at the beginning.
And an intelligent joke.
I mean, you don't want to, if you got a drumming on your hands, you don't want him to go, because if your friend is going to feel funny when he gets the wine.
Did that actor ever work again?
Dudley?
No, yeah, I guess it was Dudley, yes.
Have you ever seen Dudley's father? Ooshy Wooshy.
No, I haven't.
Go look at Dudley's father. Not good looking.
Why would you know what Dudley's father looks like?
Because he comes in that episode and he rescues Dudley.
Okay, I'll
because Gordon
do.
Jump.
Yeah, Gordon Jump.
Gives him, yeah. And then Dudley, like, is holding his stomach. He's like, oh, you gave me something that made me feel funny. And he's like, hey, there's no big deal. Do you guys like cartoons?
Yeah, that is the worst, creepiest episode of all time.
There are no less than 5 kidnapping episodes of Different Strokes. And there's one where a family kidnaps Sam, and they're, like, sitting around a dinner table, and, like, the two kids are supposed to, like, just buy into that Sam is part of the family.
80s television is terrifying. Almost as terrifying as us having to break right now.
Yeah, I'm beginning to yell that. We're usually allowed to run late on the Angeroo, especially when I'm knocking it out of the park. All right, so we'll come back. We got some of this stuff from Aaron Hernandez. .985 The Sports Hub, where Toucher and Rich. Netflix has a special on Aaron Hernandez. I watched most of the first episode last night.
It's really well done. And I think the best part of it is we've heard everything about the Aaron Hernandez story, but I am finding new stuff that I did not know
from this
documentary.
I mean, the whole thing. I mean, one of the first things in the first episode is he had a sexual relationship with the quarterback of his high school football team.
You know what? I think that was uncovered in the thing that the Globe did. The Globe did that. I don't know if you saw that four-part, five-part thing they did.
I can't read.
It was really good. But
okay, I didn't know.
Okay.
But so these people are on camera and they're talking about it, and it is fascinating how someone who was, by all accounts, charismatic and in a good person can turn into what he turned into.
That is true. And one of the more fascinating things that they have is just a stockpile of audio of him on the phone with his mother, on the phone with the Pounceys, anybody who called the jailhouse. These guys have audio of. And the second episode opens up with a fairly weird, disturbing call just from the tone of it. This is Aaron Hernandez's agent speaking with Aaron Hernandez while he is in jail. Let's take a listen.
What you been up to? I'm still trying to get you marketing deals. It's not so easy, man. I talked to Nike the other day, and they said that it's really hard to put the Nike swooshes on orange jumpsuits.
Yeah, I know.
But no, everything is good, dude. Everything is good.
Hey, can you get me a Smith & Wesson deal?
No, I cannot get you a Smith & Wesson deal. You
Oh,
All right. Good thing to joke about. And he is in such denial in all of this. Like,
yes.
I mean, every phone call, that's the one thing that you'll see. One of the sadder things, and I don't know if this is in the first or the second episode, was his cousin who was going through cancer treatment. And she is one of the few people who would just stick up for him. So she was the person who stashed the car that he was in on the night of the shooting, and she'd been holding on to it. So the police found her home, and they confiscated the car, and they called her to be a witness in the trial. And remember, she's going through cancer treatment, and she flat out refused to testify, to say anything against Aaron Hernandez. And because of that, they warned her, they told her, we're going to have to hold you in contempt of court and bring you into jail. And so she got arrested and put in jail, and it like completely screwed up her cancer treatment and made her like unbelievably sick because she stood up for Aaron Hernandez, a guy who everyone knew was guilty. So, I mean, it's not just him. It's all the people around him. It gets into a lot of the lives of Old Noy, which they do great service to that. However, as serious and as well done as this documentary is, there's one person that every time he comes on the screen, I just say, why is he here? What has he added to this?
Now, this is someone who is kind of a recluse.
He is. You never see from him or hear from him at all.
I mean,
so for the fact that they got him to speak publicly.
I mean, they had to go deep into the bowels of East Boston to the finest chicken parmesan sandwich place.
Okay, what makes a good chicken parm sandwich? First things first. You got to find a place that makes a good chicken palm sandwich.
That's right. Jermaine Wiggins somehow got his way on this documentary.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. He's on here.
They didn't play together.
No, of course not. No, Aaron Hernandez was not. No.
Ooh.
He was just expatriate who will talk.
Yeah.
I wonder
if he called them.
Hey, don't discount that.
Every time he spoke, I would have to rewind it and say, did he actually say anything here, or are these just words? So let's say,
over under if he ever talked to Aaron Hernandez.
But for me, I like chocolate dick.
It's one of my all-time favorites.
I mean, how many times?
All right. The over under is one.
If you want insight, you go to Jermaine Wiggins.
Who, by the way, we love Jermaine.
Well, of course we do.
We love Jermaine.
We love Jermaine Wiggins. But he
pops up on TMZ, and you're like, what the hell are you doing?
Why do people care what Jermaine Wiggins
says? Why does anyone care what you have to say? All right, here we go.
I would have never expected what he was off the field, what Aaron was off the field. I would have never expected that from meeting him.
Hang on, you wouldn't have thought that he was a double murderer?
Because you can tell that.
Guy's like, oh, well, this guy's murdered two people.
Yeah, like he was in the locker room one day, and like he was like, eh. Now this guy, this offensive tackle looks like he's killed a few people.
Yeah. I've high-fived people before, and instantly said, okay, mass murderer. But I never got that vibe with Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, Ted Bundy didn't just walk around with a tattoo on his head that said, hey, I'm a serial killer. Remember when I asked about his tattoos and Dennis and Callahan like freaked out about like how stupid I was, and then it turned out that the tattoos were like a big part of the trial.
Right, there were signs, right? They used it in the trial.
Yeah. I'm so stupid.
How do you know what that person is, you know, mentally? How are they?
I mean, you got to go to a chicken pot. You got to find a mental health expert that's good.
Oh, yeah.
First thing is you got to find a mental health expert that knows about people that murder. Now, I never played with him nor met him on many occasions, but I'm here. I wonder if he paid them.
Once this whole thing came out with the Odin Lloyd, you started hearing all types of stuff.
How'd you
get up on your knees? Get up on your knees.
How'd you uncover that gem?
Yeah, that happened.
With the Odin Lloyd.
Wait,
I mean, when it was on TV 24 hours a day? So when the Odin Lloyd murder came out, there were some people asking questions.
No, nothing he said there is anything of any substance.
No.
That entire, like...
How the hell is he on this?
Dude, I don't know. I'm watching it. Every time he comes on, it's like there's this really serious documentary. I just start laughing.
Okay, I'm assuming people... My assumption is people that played with them don't want to be associated with him, so they don't want to talk.
Right, there's just one guy. I'll do anything.
Yeah, and so they Wiggins' agent reached out to somebody and was like, he'll talk.
Are we sure it's not Wiggy himself who made the phone call?
Well, he's got that one agent guy.
Is this the next clip?
This is
okay. Well, maybe that clip is just the one innocuous one. Let's take a listen to see. Maybe Jermaine Wiggins has something else of importance to say.
Again, I'm very fond of Jermaine Wiggins.
We love him, but
I just don't quite know why he's in this
documentary. I'm watching this going, why is he doing? What does he add to this?
I had a bunch of catches in the snow game.
Prosecutors in Boston claim Hernandez drove up next to two men and opened fire after Hernandez blamed them for spilling a drink at a nightclub.
Allegedly, he pulls up to a car next to him and shoots into the window. That's no sane person.
Well, the first thing you need to know about shooting into a car window is you have to have a gun that's good at shooting at car windows.
You have to have a car with a window.
See, that's no sane person. You pull up and you put a gun out, you shoot somebody in the face, that's not a sane person.
I think that you could go to my daughter's elementary school and get that quote.
I'm telling you, every quote from Wiggy, I'm like, why are they talking to him?
Prosecutors in Boston claim Hernandez drove up next to two men and opened fire after Hernandez blamed them for spilling a drink at a nightclub.
Allegedly, he pulls up to a car next to him.
And if you're going to pull up to a car, the first thing you need to know is how to pull up real good.
What's beef? And shoots into the window. That's no sane person. That's no sane person.
Wait a second. Now you're to tell me that if an individual gets a drink spilled on them, then pulls up to their automobile and starts firing into the window, that they are mentally unstable?
To that he would say,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I hope that his family doesn't sue Wiggins.
Well, I mean, it is a controversial take. Wildly controversial. Almost as controversial as the time that he tried to freestyle when he was on the radio. Yeah.
This is the greatest
it's fantastic
thing ever.
This was on a weekend, I believe. Hardy was in studio.
No, it was midday. Hardy was filling in. During the week.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, Hardy was there. Wiggy was there. And I think Wiggy was pissed that he wasn't a part of 98 Mile. And he's like, I can freestyle? And Hardy's like, all right, man. Sure, fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money.
Yeah, that's the chorus.
Dollar bill, y'all. Here it comes. Yeah. I grew up on the crime side, New York Times side.
Ooh.
Hold on. Hey.
What am I holding on for?
It's the intro. You gotta have a nice intro. Yeah.
Are you going to do something?
Oh, you want me to do something?
Yeah, I thought
I was having hype for you. Here we go. Making money on the day. Party on the right. Coughing to my left. Don't know what the flow about. Gotta go about. Get on another show and go out. Now I'm dropping lines.
Why didn't Kaufman step in and start freestyling like you know he would?
Keep going.
I was going on a picnic on the lawn.
I mean, yeah. It was that good.
Female deers are called a fawn.
I was in the cipher for me.
Adam's rap was clearly the best of 98 Mile. We all remember.
Ooh, that was bad.
I do remember that one, yes.
It's so bad, like it's mean to play it.
I mean, that was not great.
No, it was better than what Wiggins did.
Wiggins' 98 Mile rap? Oh, come on.
No, what he did there.
Oh, I mean, that's...
I mean, all he did was the chorus and then the first two lines of the song.
He did Cash Rules Everything Around.
Yeah, and then he went, I grew up in the New York Times side, staying alive was no jive.
He went, woo, doggy.
And then he's like, you got to let the intro run for a few minutes. Just like every great rap song.
Well, listen, Aaron Hernandez, that documentary is available on Netflix. I can't suggest it enough. I think it's
But for me, I like chocolate and thick.
All right. Here are the headlines.
Toucher and Rich.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
All right. Well, it is my birthday, and there's only one wish I had, and it's coming true. Rock and Roll Mike, hello.
Yeah, cha-cha, happy birthday, man.
How are you doing, Rock and Roll Mike?
All right, I'm rocking and rolling, man. I'm a little under the weather because I'm in dumpsters and alleyways and everything going on. I'm down Winslow Street. Hey, two the great concerts, August 25th and 26th. Yeah.
Are you gonna? Sorry, are you gonna go see Motley Crue?
Oh yeah, you know I'm the encore after the show. After that, you know that. Oh yeah.
Bird can get you in, you know.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Rock and Roll might need a little help. I gotta go into those concerts, man.
All right. Can you do me one favor on my birthday?
Absolutely.
Can you sing "Creatures of the Night"?
Absolutely. Living in the darkness, running from today, hiding from tomorrow, nothing left to say. Creatures of the night.
All right.
Yeah. 98.5
Mike, whatever happened to your single Hot Balls? Don't you have a song that's called Hot Balls?
Yeah. Hey, where's Wallach? What's going on here? Where's Nick? Where's Brad? What's going on?
Wallach has never been happier to be deaf.
I've been listening. Come on. Yeah, Fenway Park, man. I got to get some tickets, man. I got to get into those shows.
Well, we can get you in. I'm sure we could get you in.
Man. Right on, man.
We could do
hot
a contest.
Hot balls, yes.
We could do a contest. Go with Rock and Roll Mike.
Yeah, I got to get in, man. I got to go see that. Come on. Hit me like a bomb. Come on, man.
All right.
Hit me like a bomb.
We'll get you in. Stay in touch.
Absolutely. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Rock and Roll Mike.
Absolutely. Rich.
Yes.
Wallach. Nick Bud. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
His phone's better. I'll tell
you. See me. You know where I'm at.
All right. Well, we don't know
don't
where you're
really,
at.
But,
and I don't know who Bob on the show is, but one of the great treats is in my mind is him knowing the lyrics to Creatures of the Night by Kiss.
You just promised him that he was going to get into that show.
Oh, yeah. I'll give him the show.
Do you know what he's going to be like at that show?
I didn't say I was going to hang out with him, but I'll buy him a ticket.
Just let him loose?
Yeah, not his problem.
Like,
I'd make him wear a GoPro.
Chances you get that GoPro back.
I'm not going to get him a GoPro, but I swear to God, I'll buy him a ticket.
All right.
Not next to me.
You got to think this through.
What's he going to do? There's security
spaz
guards.
Spaz out like a wet cat in a bathtub.
No, yeah, he's going to set him loose under the ticket in the back of Section 2. That's what he's going
to
do.
No, I'll buy him a ticket. It doesn't mean that he has to see
Can
me.
Can you imagine the poor person who has to stand next to Rock and Roll Mike?
Yeah, which makes it exceptionally funny.
Like, you paid, like, what, $250 for a ticket?
Dude, it's a Motley Crue show. It's not like the Prince.
I'm even talking by Motley Crue show standards. I don't think I'd want to stand next to Rock and Roll Mike.
I don't know. Motley Crue's not going to be an attractive audience. I can tell you that. When you saw Bret Michaels live in Vegas,
yes.
I'm sure it was a regular debutante's ball.
I mean, it was great. It was a rock and roll party right here in Las Vegas. I'll tell you what, Las Vegas, you guys, you've been so good to me after all these years. I built a dirt track right here where I race my go-karts just a couple miles from here. Hey, look at this bass player. It's the guy from Cinderella. You remember him? Eric Brittenham. Everybody come up here. Eric Brittenham. He's going to spin his guitar here for America. One time for America, two time for the troops. Here we go. Here's a little song called Nothing But a Good Time. Let's go.
I used to love Poison. I liked him a lot.
Ricky, I have a feeling that CeCe DeVille is the wild card. You might almost have Vince Neil levels of mess.
He is sober, but I'm hoping by that point he won't be. But he is actually sober.
Okay.
In doing well. And I don't mean harm on the man, but just if he could have a relapse of a week.
I'm going to make a quick promise because I know that there's heart palpitations in the two rooms. Bird, Nick, I'm not going to make you go to the concert with Rock and Roll Mike.
No, I never
like
said that.
Like, that might be, out of all the things we've ever asked you guys to do, that might be
no.
Most
I like
over-the-top, unfairly stressful.
Okay. Do you think, what in the world would Rock and Roll Mike like more in life than to see the Motley Crue show?
I mean, to see Kiss. That's it.
Yeah. So I'll buy him a ticket. If I can find him some,
you might find him with his pants off.
Yeah. I'll buy him a ticket. I honestly am buying him a ticket not to be funny. Like, I'm buying him a ticket because I know
he's to make dreams come true.
Because he'd appreciate it. Dude, he knows the words to Creatures of the Night.
Rock and Roll Mike lives outside!
By the way, I might be going to the Kiss show. I looked at the tickets up in New Hampshire. Like, almost the entire floor is available. Oh,
what do you think? People want to go see Kiss?
Well, they're charging like $500 or something for the floor seats. Well, I want to go, though.
The fact that it's in New Hampshire makes it kind of funnier.
So it said, bring Pasta Joe with Rock and Roll Mike.
Pasta Joe doesn't love metal.
How do we know that? He loves Wheaties.
When was the last time you think he ate Wheaties?
That's probably been a while.
Well, thank you, everyone, for the birthday wishes. I appreciate that. And I will go on to live my life in a way that there's no guarantees that 46 is coming up.
Well, happy birthday, Fred. Enjoy it.
Thank you, fellas. That'll do it for us. Everyone have a wonderful day. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.